Brad. In our Touchpoints Rehab interview chairs this morning, NBC Connecticut's investigative reporters, the troubleshooters, Jill Konopka and Len Bestoff. Good morning and welcome to Brad and Dan.
Good morning.
Thanks for having us. Morning. Hey, Len.
Hey. This is terrific, boy. Surrounded
by reporters.
I'm so excited to be sitting among this group. This is awesome.
Well, listen, we're honored to have you. And Jill, you had a story on NBC Troubleshooters involving this murder victim, James Thomas Stewart III, and how the family is having a difficult time getting the records to this case. How about explaining this to our audience?
Yeah, so the sister of the victim, Tommy Stewart's sister, Monique, she lives in Washington, D.C. She had contacted NBC Connecticut frustrated. This happened on July 20th of 2016, and they've been trying to get the report from the Connecticut State Police, and they just haven't really been getting anywhere. They've reached out. For a while, they say that their, you know, calls were not answered. Nobody was getting back to them. And they were just really frustrated. It's going on a year and a half, and they're like, well, what's going on? Why is it taking so long? So initially, they were told, they say, by the Connecticut State Police investigator assigned their case, that there was a nine-month backlog to the incoming reports and records within the Connecticut State Police. And then they started sending me all of their documents, and you know, October 26th to November 1st, they were getting emails from somebody within the Reports and Records Division saying, oh, now it's an 11 to 12 month backlog. And then they decided that they were going to meet with the Connecticut State Police the week of Thanksgiving. They were going to sit down, and they told us, NBC Connecticut, that they were going to be allowed to look at the report, but they couldn't physically take a copy of the report home with them. And then all of a sudden that changed to, we'll answer your questions, but you can't see the report. So unbeknownst to the state police, they had their meeting. It was about an hour and 10 minutes long. The brother and sister of Tommy Stewart came to NBC Connecticut right afterwards to tell us what went down in that meeting. And it was a lot of unanswered questions. And you know, they're frustrated because they were told that the report was completed in July, but based on the budget cuts in the state of Connecticut, there's a backlog, and that backlog went from 9 months to 11 to 12 months to 22 months when I reached out to the Connecticut State Police for a comment and to figure out what was going on. So they're saying, you know, you guys are extending, you know, our heartbreak by not releasing this report to us, but the state police are saying, well, our hands are tied. We don't have enough people to actually redact what's in the report because not everything can be released.
Okay, so is that really the holdup, the fact that they're having a difficult time redacting certain elements of the report?
Well, that's part of what they said in the statement to us, that these things take time. We have to go through the processing of the report, and that entails some redactions. But they were told, and the Connecticut State Police did not confirm this to us, the NBC Connecticut troubleshooter, that there are only four people in that particular office that's able to do that. So that's what the holdup is.
What about the talk, though? And I've talked to some troopers myself that they just don't. The reason we have the big problems with the speeding and everything, they don't have enough police, and they're thinking about hiring more police.
Yeah, but this is really not an issue. This issue is more to do with that office, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, do we know how many people used to work in that office?
I don't. I've asked some follow-up questions of the state police to try and figure out, you know, how many reports are kind of in transit and hadn't been released yet. Because once our story aired, two different families reached out to us saying that they were in the same boat and that they had still been waiting for their reports as well. And this family's frustrated because they just want to see what's in the report. They have all these questions or all these rumors floating around, and they just want peace of mind, right? Their hearts are never going to not be broken because they lost their love. A father, a brother, a son, a really amazing individual, the way they described Tommy Stewart to me. And they just want to see what's in the report. And they don't understand why, if it was done in July, what's the holdup? We're now in December. Why can't they see that report? And they say, the brother and sister of the victim, that they were going to be allowed to look at the report in that meeting. And then all of a sudden it was, no, you can't even look at the report. We'll answer your questions. And a lot of the questions that they say were being asked, they couldn't answer. And it's not like, like the way that the brother and sister described it to me was that everybody in that meeting, there were five individuals in that meeting, a state trooper detective, his sergeant, and then someone from that office. You know, there was frustration about, you know, not being able to deliver that report, and that it's just they're doing the best that they can. It's just there's so much on their plate. And I don't know if you've ever gone down to the records division in Middletown at State Police Headquarters. You peek behind the wall and they'll say all those boxes, that's what we're trying to get through. And this has been going on for years. So they always have a lot on their plate. But, you know, at what point the family says this is unacceptable. No. This is unacceptable.
Well, I mean, my God. I mean, it's look at.
Okay, well, let's for people who don't know, fill in the blanks. How was Thomas Stewart fatally shot?
So an off-duty Waterbury policeman, according to authorities, shot Tommy Stewart in the head and chest and then shot himself with his own service weapon. And that is what the authorities say. So he was at his home, the off-duty policeman, Halleck Yoker, in Naugatuck. And according to a Naugatuck police report, because they were called to the home that morning right before this incident transpired in Waterbury, and there was a fight, according to the Naugatuck police report, between the off-duty Waterbury policeman and his wife. And then he left upset, and that's when police say he went to Waterbury and everything happened with Tommy Stewart.
Was there a motive?
It's under investigation, apparently. So one thing that is stated in the Naugatuck police report by the now widow of Halleck Yoker was that they had a fight over an ex, and Tommy Stewart had dated Hal's widow years ago.
Okay.
So that's basically all we know.
But the victim's family is looking for closure, I'm guessing, and they would get at least some closure if they could get their hands on this report. Is that it?
They're not going to be able to.
You wait and see. They won't be able to. Too bad. That's the way they work.
Wow.
I've been through that when I was at Channel 3. Same kind of thing.
She had the sister, Monique Stewart. She said, you know, she specifically spoke to the governor, and I reached out to one of his press people, and they put it back in the hands of state police. And so I was released. They released a comment to me to include in my report. So I said, I'm thinking to myself, I would think that they might want to comment on this. But
So wait a minute. What did the governor's office say then?
They just said we refer comment back to.
Oh.
And the state police spokesman released a statement to us.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So
this is, hold that thought. We're going to check traffic.
Well, Daniel, our friends here are true investigative reporters, that's for sure.
Jill Konopka, Len Bestoff, NBC Connecticut Troubleshooters. Len, of course, is the chief investigative reporter, and you have the latest on the Whiting Forensic Institute.
Yeah, there's new information we just got yesterday confirmed by the Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services. Of the 37 employees that have been put on leave since the department's investigation of this alleged patient abuse began back in March, April of this year. Now, of those 37 employees that are on administrative leave, three of those 37 were terminated yesterday. Give me a second for a little math here. Of the 37 on administrative leave, 10 are now separated from state service. Five have either resigned or retired, and the other five have been terminated. The three that were terminated yesterday included a forensic nurse and two forensic treatment specialists. What they were terminated for included physical abuse, inattentiveness or falling asleep on the job, and also failing to report work rule violations.
Now, was this a mutual termination, or were those who were terminated, are they going to fight this?
I would say it is likely they will fight it. I've talked with a lot of folks on the inside, and generally the way these things work is that people who are terminated will generally try to appeal. I don't know that for a fact, but I'm pretty sure between talking with people who still work there and other people in the union leadership, the SEIU 1199, that there will be, in all likelihood, some appeal of these terminations.
You know, when you think about this, and you folks are really into it, but it took so long. It went on and on and on. I mean, before you guys got into it, can you imagine some of the things that must have happened I mean, it's this is tough stuff.
Well, I know you investigated something like this years ago at a different facility.
Belchertown, Massachusetts, and Mansfield,
right,
here in the state.
And the thing is, what they talk about with this patient, this 59-year-old man, who is a difficult patient, okay, they had surveillance video in his room. The employees knew this and allegedly still did this. And by the way, the retention records at the time of this alleged abuse were only 30 days. So while we're saying that he was repeatedly abused over a one-month period between mid-February and mid-March of this year, we really don't know if it went further back because there's no retention records.
You know, let's talk about this for just a moment.
There's no records.
The retention records. You're talking about video?
Correct.
Which can be destroyed after 30 days?
Correct. It has now been extended, Dan, to 6 weeks.
Okay.
That was part of the reform.
How do they store the video? Do we know?
I do not know. I assume it's electronic.
Well, the reason I bring this up is years ago, you can understand, they used to have this because everything was videotaped. But with digital today, you can store records for years. So to me, that's an issue. It might be a separate issue, but at some point, that needs to be addressed as far as record retention is concerned. That said, we had Senator Summers on the show the other day, and I think you heard the interview.
Yes.
She believes that there is more than just this one patient who has been abused. What do you know? From what you've investigated?
We have certainly been told that. But at this point, that is not something we're ready to go on air with as verified information at this point. And to be fair to the state says this is an isolated case. That's what its belief is at this time.
Has anybody looked at how these folks are hired initially? I mean, these are some of the things that...
The training.
This is how what we found out back when we were doing this. And you just wonder how they get in to a place, and that's how it kind of starts. And the next thing you know, you got it, and you don't know what to do.
That's a fair question. And the way it works generally is if you're a forensic nurse, you certainly have to have a high degree of qualification to do something like that. In terms of the entry-level job at a Whiting Forensic Division where you're a forensic treatment specialist, there are less qualifications, but certainly once they get in the door, they get all kinds of training and things like de-escalation, things of that matter where, you know, it's nonviolent de-escalation. You're probably aware that back in the day when you were doing this initial reporting on Mansfield and in Belchertown, they used restraints.
Absolutely.
Whiting really avoids using the four-point restraints as much as possible. They rarely use them. At least that's what employees and people who work at DEMIS tell me. So there needs to be a lot of training to figure out how to de-escalate a situation where someone's getting very physical. That happens a lot. These are, in many cases, violent people. These are people found not guilty by reason of insanity for major crimes. And these forensic treatment specialists and these forensic nurses have a very difficult job. But, you know, you can't abuse a patient.
True. No. And one of the allegations, wasn't it, that a soiled diaper was on the head, put on the head?
Right. I had that on this morning.
Yeah.
That is correct, Jill. That is correct.
Now, the total is up to what, 37 people?
Correct. 37 employees, staffers, on administrative leave.
On one patient?
Correct. All connected. They may not have abused the patient, but they may have known about it and allegedly not done anything. Those are the allegations.
Do we know how many who are suspended who are still getting paid?
Good question. I believe if you at least 27, the ones 27. Because if you've got 37 on administrative leave, 10 have either resigned, retired, or been terminated. So the other 27, you could argue, are still getting paid because it's administrative leave with pay.
Oh. And they're getting paid.
Is it the state police still conducting the investigation?
That is correct. They are. And there's also a parallel track investigation being done by DEMIS now, by its human resources department.
Because of the work that you exposed.
Well, thank you, Jill.
But the bottom line is this.
This is what does it. Just what you're doing. There's no question about it. And I know from experience on this one.
Jill, go ahead.
Well, we all work in the public eye, right? The four of us right here. And I always think to myself, like, I conduct myself and my business like I'm always on camera, right? Like, whether it's my neighbors at my house or at work or in the newsroom or out in the field. Because, you know, in this day and age, anybody can film anything at any point in time. So you do this story and you're like, well, they were on camera. They knew that they were going to be recorded.
And that's one of the things that Senator Summers has spoken about quite a bit is this impunity that these folks allegedly seem to have. They weren't even worried at all that, okay, I'm on videotape poking, taunting, spitting, putting a dirty diaper, dirty mop on this patient.
I wonder sometimes if that just escapes an individual, that's not in their mind as they're engaged in such alleged activity.
Right, yeah. I think you could be right. And I have sisters who are nurses. They're very tough jobs, and we're not in their shoes. So I know that they deal with a lot, but, I mean, come on.
So when is this going to all end? How long is it going to take to continue this investigation? Any kind of timetable? I know Senator Summers is frustrated.
At this point, we have no end in sight from the state. We're not getting any indication of when it's done. And we ask. But at this point, they want to keep looking into this. They are concerned about patient care. They are concerned about how workers are getting trained, and so they want to get to the bottom of it. But I think it is a fair question to say, okay, when is it going to end?
We have a minute left. Give us a little tease as to what you may be working on, where we're going to have to watch NBC 30 in order to get the story.
That's right.
Jill, you first.
Well, I'm looking through documents right now involving maybe inappropriate conduct involving someone who wears a uniform. So more to come.
All right, more to come. Len.
I will plug my buddy Dan Corcoran, who's also on the Troubleshooters. He's working on an interesting story about ground transportation at Bradley Airport. And I'll just leave it at that.
All right.
Whoa. We got some more to do.
Yes. Jill, Len, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
8:30 in the morning, and we will be back.